It's time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce talking with us about a book that he mentioned last week, Lost Seasons in Havana.
Yeah, now this book took me by surprise. I thought I knew a fair amount about the history of...
Not Lost Seasons, Last Seasons.
Yeah.
It was upside down.
Yeah, right. I thought I knew a fair amount about the way professional baseball, in terms of American professional baseball, had gone away in Cuba. But I had only scratched the surface. There's a great book, which we talked about a couple of times, called, I'll think about it in a minute. But anyway, that we had talked about it before. And a lot of people think that that what killed baseball in Cuba was when some of Castro's over-exuberant soldiers fired into the air and a member of the Havana Sugar Kings coaching staff was hit in the head. And that's what I always, but Baseball in the Cold War is a book I was thinking about. It's way more complicated than that. And it's way more complicated, all the story about the Teonce and Fidel, whether he was a good pitcher or not. But what's fascinating is how many iconic major leaguers and major league managers worked in Cuba and they really liked it there. They liked it a lot of the time when Castro was there. They liked it when Batista was there because they lived in a completely different world from the rest of Cuba. Tommy Lasorda was a huge booster of baseball. And just prior to Castro taking power at La Revolucion, there was a meeting to decide whether or not to put a major league team in Havana. And Havana had always drawn well, but not the kind of numbers you'd need probably for a major league team. But we have to remember that at the time, Havana's wealth came from American gambling. And Havana's wealth came from American gangsters. And the people didn't have the money. I mean, they did, but Cuba had so many dictators or puppets from the 1930s on. Now, at the same time as this is sort of unraveling in Cuba in the late 1950s and early 1960s, there is a Caribbean League championship that goes on. And it was... it was contested in different places, Venezuela, in Cuba, in Puerto Rico, and other Latin and Central American countries. And so baseball had a real tradition, and there were players that were playing in the major league. There were lots of Cubans. In fact, for a long time, many Cubans who were probably of African descent were playing in the major leagues with DNA that certainly George Preston Marshall would have considered suspect. But because they were Cubans, they were allowed to play. If they were dark-skinned Cubans, they weren't. If they were lighter-skinned Cubans, they were. So there had been this long tradition of Latin American baseball players well before we think of the sort of explosion of Latin players from the late 1950s on. And we obviously there are a tremendous number of Latino players in baseball now. What is great about this is, yes, it is a history of the times, and it's very well done. The writer's name is either Cesar Brioso or Cesar, depending on how he would want us to pronounce it. And there's this great picture on the front page of American baseball team in Cuba, Americans who were playing baseball in Cuba, along with Cubans on a Cuban team. And there's a guy in his catching gear, sort of on and off, holding a machine gun because... Once Castro took over, the soldiers would go to games for free, and they would all bring their machine guns with them. But what's amazing are the number of players that would go and play winter ball. And what's really astounding, the first baseball card I ever got was Camilio Pascual,
Washington Senators.
In that pack was Camilio Pascual, Sherm Lawler, Joe Adcock, Ted Kluszewski, and one other person.
Wow, that's a good pack.
It was a really good pack. Camilio Pascual.
You didn't get all the Eddie Bersoudes in that one.
Well, no, but I once did. Jeff Petrie of the Montreal Canadiens defenseman's dad, Dan Petrie, I once in the 70s had 35 of his cards. But what transpired is these guys would go down and play winter ball, because they weren't making enough money to not play winter ball. And these pitchers pitched all the time. And guess what? They didn't have arm issues. You know, right. And Pascual was a junk baller and he mixed it up. But he also, some of these guys had phenomenal success playing on really good teams. And you could argue that when Winter League shrunk down the number of players, that you had teams that were probably as good as anybody's team anywhere. Mm. And there were minor league affiliates, of course, of that league that ran from Montreal and Trois-Rivières and other teams in Canada and upper Midwest, all the way down to Havana. And teams regularly would go, if spring practice, if it was raining for 3 or 4 days, they'd hop on a plane, go to Havana because they could play there. If you think you know the history of the Batista-Castro era, you may, if you've really studied it from a historical point of view. But if you hadn't, you really will learn where all the mistakes are made. You'll learn, you can see the Bay of Pigs fiasco coming. You can see the whole Castro coming to New York, being hailed as a hero, being everybody's buddy, going to the UN, making people angry. You watch all this devolve, and what you see, one of the things lost, and I know things of much greater importance were lost. One of the things that was lost was a great baseball tradition. These people loved baseball. And the subtitle, The Castro Revolution, The End of Professional Baseball in Cuba, does sum up what this does, but it's a book is bigger than that. It's really, when I saw it, I said, you know, I should take a look at this. I jumped into it and I read it in just a couple of sittings. It's really, really a top-notch book. And I hope we'll get Cesar or Cesar Barroso on at some point.
Excellent. Next week, we're talking hockey on Sports Lit.
Yeah, we're talking about the new definitive history of hockey. It's called Global Hockey History by Stephen Hardy and Andrew Holman. Stephen Hardy was on with us before because he was a contributor to Replays, Rivalries, and Rumbles. Former professor at the University of New Hampshire. And Andrew Holman teaches down at Bridgewater State. They put together a remarkable book. How they did this in the time they did it is just boggles my mind because it is the most comprehensive book on the subject of hockey I have ever read.
Nice. Now, you've also got a book that was recommended to you by one of our other Sports Lit guests.
Yeah, Tyler Hellard. We talked a number of years back about a book called King Leary, which is considered, there's one book in the hockey canon, you read that one, by Paul Quarrington. And I knew Quarrington had written a number of other books, but Tyler Hellard said, you got to read Logan in Overtime because that's as good a hockey novel as there is. There's also another, we got a book in the other day from Nebraska called Here's the Pitch, The Amazing, True, and New Improved Story of Baseball and Advertising by Roberta Newman. And
that sounds good.
Yeah, that should be really interesting. And a book called Nine Goals by Reg Lansbury about the last day of the 69-70 Stanley Cup NHL season where whoever scored the most goals, the Rangers or the Canadians, would go. And it's a tremendously interesting book so far.
Good stuff ahead. Looking forward to it. Thank you, Bruce.
You are welcome, sir.